This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, the topic is strategies for collecting child support. My guest is Raymond Goldstein, a family law attorney, and is the incoming chair of the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California. He's the managing partner of the Center for Enforcement of Family Support, a private law firm in Culver City. He is also on the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section of the Los Angeles Bar Association. Funding for Your Legal Rights, this particular segment, is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar. Funding also for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Raymond, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Chuck. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I know that your firm is about 35 years old, and you probably were only a little kid at that time. When did you join it?
I was lucky enough to take over this firm about 20 years ago. It was, as you said, founded 35 years ago at that time with the commitment to enforcing family law awards, and our charge has been the same ever since. And we're proud to do nothing but deal with enforcement of family law awards.
Would you do this, Raymond? I know you've also written articles for the State Bar. What kind of articles do you write for it?
Well, my publications for the State Bar are more lawyer-oriented. The State Bar has a publications arm called CEB, Continuing Education of the Bar, and they write, they publish many treatises and books for mostly attorney practitioners. So I contribute substantially to their two-volume set collecting debt. I'm the continuing author of something called their Civil Action Guide, Enforcing Civil Money Judgments, and I write the enforcement sections in their Child and Spousal Support publication, Establishing, Modifying, and Enforcing Support. And then I write things throughout the state for other organizations and a couple of national publications, but Enough about that.
Let me throw one at you. I am aware at this point, having been a deputy DA for San Mateo County for many years, that there is a section of the county, and I think most counties, if not all counties throughout California, have them, child support services, which are there to help if the parent who has received an order from the court to receive support from the other parent, support for the child. If the other parent who's supposed to be paying that hasn't paid it, child support services in the counties are supposed to help the parent who's supposed to receive the money. Why do you need to get involved?
Well, you know, enforcement, as you mentioned, was previously done by the DA's office on a county-by-county level. And now it's more of a state-run organization under the Department of Child Support Services, although it's kind of put into practice on a county level, but now it's been it's governed under this statewide organization. And I'll tell you, God bless them. They have continued to improve their performance. They do a tremendous job, but they are overburdened and underfunded. Many of these counties have literally hundreds and hundreds of thousands of cases at some phase of either establishing support or enforcing it, very limited attorneys, caseworkers assist, but they can't do the whole job themselves. So really where we come in, and one of my recommendations to all of listeners out there is to make sure that they do in fact have a case with the Department of Child Support Services. It's free. And even if they decide to take actions on their own as a self-represented party, or if they decide to retain counsel, they should still have a case with DCSS. So to answer your question with that bit of background, given the number of cases that the department has, they do some things really well and simply don't have the person power to do other things.
Okay.
Those other things are where we come in. The more sophisticated judgment debtors, the people that are concealing income and assets behind third parties, whether it be a new spouse, a minor child, a business partner, or maybe they've created some kind of an alias name or a corporation that does nothing that then shield their income and assets. And so to get to those types of issues, we utilize remedies that are certainly available to the department, but which they really don't have the manpower, the person power to handle. Things like setting aside fraudulent transfers and levies on unusual type of property like aircraft or country club memberships. So that's a brief answer.
Would you give us your input? You've been doing this now for 20 years. Here we have a parent who's been ordered by the court to make child support payments to the other parent who has the custody of the child, or at least part custody of the child. What goes on in the brains of these people if they would try to hide assets, or if they would try to use some phony name, or what thoughts do you have on that? Because this is, frankly, these are their kids that they are not paying on a regular basis child support. What would you say these people are thinking about?
Yeah, well, the answer to that really can be almost as different as many debtors as there are. I suppose they fall into a number of categories. First of all, there are those people that simply can't afford to pay the support.
Well, that I can understand. Yes.
As far as the people that can afford to pay it, it's almost always about that spouse trying to continue to exercise dominion and control over their former spouse.
And the battle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, too bad.
And if I can, you alluded to something that was pretty obvious, but I really want to underscore it, which is that if somebody hasn't yet gone to court and had a judge or commissioner order child support, then there is no child support owed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always the first step. And it's unfortunate, but every now and then I get calls from people with children that are 17, 18, 19, and they say, I'd like to enforce my support, but it's never been ordered in the first place.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
So it's really important to get that order established. And then it's very important to make sure that the order states the amount of child support that's proper under circumstances that may change.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that can change on either side of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
It might be that the creditor is the custodial parent is entitled to a higher amount, or that the non-custodial parent is entitled to a lower amount. And, I hear a lot of complaints about the system being unfair, and I've got to tell you that there are some instances where the system is unfair. I will give you that. But most of the times that I hear somebody complaining about the system, it happens as a result of one of two things. Either somebody sat on their rights, and the prime example of that is where a debtor is ordered to pay a certain amount each month in child support, say $500 a month, and at some point thereafter he loses his job or his income goes down, and he would be entitled to a reduction in support, but instead he just stops paying,
mm-hmm.
and he never goes back to court to have the amount reduced. Unfortunately, and this is clearly what the law is, a court has absolutely no jurisdiction, in other words, no power, to change, the technical term is modify, an order for support, either child or spousal, until the date that somebody files a paper in court requesting that change.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if somebody were to file something, say, in February, and the matter doesn't come up for hearing until, say, July, the court has the ability and often will exercise this discretion to make its order retroactive to the date of that earlier filing. But no sooner than that. So if somebody's been unemployed for 5 years and then files, that's the date of retroactivity that the court can set it to.
The court can set it back 5 years? Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is if he was unemployed for 5 years and he should have gone in 5 years ago, but he goes in today, today is the earliest date that the court can change the order.
Oh, my. That's really unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. So the other category of how the system can be seen as unfair is the first one is where people sit on their rights. The other is where people try to play the system and game the system. Maybe it's by not disclosing everything they should, being less than forthright, being not credible in court. So, you know, really honesty is the best policy, and don't sit on your legal rights.
Yeah.
So getting back to this point that you made, that you alluded to about getting a support order in the first place, and this really goes for enforcement as well, people should understand that there's different ways of doing that. The Department of Child Support Services will get you an order for support at no charge. It won't be fast, and it may not be the best order you can get, but they will get you one. Another option, of course, is for a party to represent themselves. A similar flavor to that is to represent themselves, but to have assistance from either an attorney who's just consulting with them or something called a legal document preparer to help them prepare the forms. There's also in every court, in every family law court, there is something called the family law facilitator, and they are available at no charge to the public to help fill out forms.
They're in the courthouse usually.
And then often the best way, but clearly the most expensive, is to retain private counsel to either to obtain that order, to modify the order, or to enforce the order if necessary.
Now, Raymond, you mentioned a few minutes ago that some people have not yet gotten, let's say, the custodial parent does not have or is not the recipient of an order from the court ordering the non-custodial parent to make child support payments. And yet, what I'd like you to clarify here is usually, I would think, although I haven't practiced family law for a long, long time, usually I would think that when people break up, when a husband and wife break up, they go into court to get a dissolution of their marriage, which would include, if there are children, the court having the authority and the power to order child support. Now, where what happens here with people not even having, for years, not even having a child support order? What's going on here? Is there no formal divorce or what?
Well, as you've suggested, the orders for support can issue far before the divorce becomes final.
Yes, I see.
But this problem arises primarily by people sitting on their rights and not pushing it through, not staying on top of the Department of Child Support Services to make sure an order is established, or maybe pushing their attorney to make sure it happens in a timely manner. It just happens. In fact, I have seen on countless occasions where people separate with minor children, and the physical separation is all that they want at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not looking for child support. And, you know, one thing about that is that we can never foresee the future.
Yes.
And although somebody might be financially comfortable at a particular moment in time, you never know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And that child support, even if it's not needed, can be set aside into some kind of an account, a 529 or some kind of a savings account, you know, for the child's future.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, let's remember, the child support is for the benefit of the child.
Yes.
It's not for the custodial parent.
Of course.
How a custodial parent chooses to spend their child support is entirely up to them and can't be questioned by the court or anyone else for the most part.
What prevention aspects would you suggest if parties, if a man and a woman, or maybe we even have a couple, a same-sex couple who have an agreement for raising a child, etc., and they split up, and one leaves the area and goes maybe to some other city, let's assuming hasn't left the state of California. What recommendations do you have for the parent who is in who has the custody of the child and wants to make sure that he or she receives child support? What kind of continued communication do you recommend that support that parent who has the custody of the child should continue to have with a non-custodial parent when it may be that this was a nasty split up, et cetera. But what recommendation do you have in terms of that person keeping in touch with the other party?
Well, you know, that, Chuck, that's a great question. It's something that I wish everybody could hear my answer to before it's too late, and they don't do this, because look, it's very common that people don't want to keep in touch with their former spouse. I understand that.
Well, it hurts.
Having said that, especially where you're dealing with a non-custodial parent who you think is going to stop paying or has already stopped paying or has given indication that he's going to stop paying, it's really important for the custodial parent to remain in communication, whether it be by emails, by correspondence, by staying in touch with the family. We're not talking about a romantic relationship. We're talking about a way to just kind of keep an eye on the other party. And, you know, this might look like focusing on the other side's business, keeping an eye on it if he's got a retail location, keeping an eye on the website, keeping an eye on social media, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. Of course, on this regard, it's very important that nobody ever think that it's permissible to assume a false identity in order to create a social media connection, because that is criminal. So, but if you are invited into the other party's circles, social media circles, then you should happily accept that. You want to keep an eye on their what kind of hobbies they're engaged in. Travel. Do they have rental property? It's not uncommon that a debtor will complain, I couldn't pay you last month because my rental property is vacant. It's been vacant for 3 months. Okay, great. Just make a note of it. And you know, by the way, on the point of record keeping, this is so important as well. It's really critical that people keep track of every payment they receive, and they should keep a log of payments they don't receive. They should keep copies of the checks, because what are we learning from these checks? Well, we're learning the financial institution, at least one of them, mm-hmm. that the debtor deals with. Keep copies of our envelopes so we can prove when they were postmarked. We want to keep track of our emails, keep copies of correspondence. If you have phone calls, keep telephone logs as to what was said. And all of this may seem unnecessary at the time, but I promise you, years later, when you're faced with a past due obligation of $10,000, $50,000, or $250,000, these things will be very useful. And then there's other ways that people can keep an eye on their debtors and really do their own investigation. Obviously, a Google search should be the first thing.
Google search what? For the name of the, under the name of the person?
Exactly. Under the name of the person, his business.
Oh, I see.
You know, there's all kinds of public licensing boards for real estate, for nursing, for physicians. You can get information on somebody's aircraft ownership through the FAA, or vessel ownership through the Coast Guard.
Because you're saying all of this is public. All of this is public records
and business operations mm-hmm. through a website called Edgar, EDGAR, mm-hmm. that keeps track of most of the SEC filings, Secretary of State's websites have information on debtor businesses. County recorder's offices will be where one would find information on real property and what's called fictitious business name statements, which is how somebody kind of often operates a Schedule C, a sole proprietorship type of a business. Mm-hmm. You'll always want to keep an eye out for what other litigation your debtor is engaged in. Is he being sued? Is he suing somebody else? Because somebody, you know, him suing somebody else might be an opportunity for you to place what's called a lien in a pending action and hopefully get a recovery on your past due child support obligation.
And Raymond, let me interrupt for just a moment. With regard to other lawsuits that either the non-custodial parent is a defendant in or maybe a plaintiff is in, what you're saying is if the custodial parent knows where the non-custodial parent is living or has his or her business. Are you saying that that person, if there's a problem of arrearages, failure to pay child support, should that custodial parent go to the clerk's office of that court, that superior court, and try to find in the index the name of the non-custodial parent, both either as to a plaintiff or as to a defendant? Are you saying going directly to the clerk's office or what?
Yeah, that's exactly right. But before getting in your car, I would log on to the internet, and many, many counties, including Los Angeles and many others, have their indexes available online. You can search them by case number. You can search them by party name sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's free. Sometimes there's a couple dollar charge. So you really need not actually drive over to the courthouse for many of these things.
Let me interrupt again. I want everybody to know this is your legal rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing strategies for collecting child support. My guest is Raymond Goldstein. He's the incoming chair of the executive committee of the family law section of the state bar. And we're talking about some of the issues. There are many, many issues that are involved where a non-custodial parent has not been up to date in making child support payments, and that's what we're talking about. Raymond, let me ask you this. In the few remaining minutes of the statewide version of the program, are you saying that with arrearages that come up, is this also a situation where the non-custodial parent has shown very little interest in wanting to have visitation rights with the child and therefore kind of has gone away and is trying to have as little contact with the child as possible and therefore also not being up to date on child support payments?
Sometimes that's true, and sometimes that's entirely not the case.
I see.
And in
fact,
we have very involved non-custodial parents mm-hmm. who still choose not to pay the child support.
I see.
So it really can be either way. I've got a case that I just got off the phone the other day with counsel for the debtor, who tells me that when the divorce came down and ordered him to pay child support, basically on the steps of the courthouse, the custodial parent came up to him and said, "I tell you what, you stay out of our life and you don't have to pay any child support."
Mm.
First of all, my client's position is entirely opposite, but such an agreement is really against public policy. Again, circling back to the comment I made that child support is for the benefit of the child.
Yes.
If there is an agreement, let me leave your statewide listeners with this. Don't enter into oral agreements. If you want to enter into an agreement, it's best to have it reviewed by an attorney, but in any event, make sure it gets reduced to writing, and the best advice is to then have your agreement turned into an order by the court.
In other words, set it up for a hearing, coming back into court.
Yeah, and you don't even need a hearing. If the parties agree and they sign, they can submit what's called a stipulation. That's the agreement part, and an order, and that's where the judge signs it, and that becomes an order of the court.
Even without going into court for an actual hearing before the judge, is that correct?
That's exactly right.
Okay. In the remaining couple of minutes that we have, what you've talked about that obviously the non-custodial parent may have lost a job. That's kind of a defense that we have here. But if the non-custodial parent has lost a job and has not been able to make child support payments for a period of time, but then becomes re-employed and is making money, that failure to pay those child support payments, whether it's several months or maybe even years, can still be enforced by the custodial parent down the road. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right, because the debtor didn't utilize his rights. Okay. The non-custodial parent did not utilize his rights to go in and ask for a modification at the time he lost his job. And what I'd like to do, if I may, in just a couple minutes we have left for this half hour, is mention two things that custodial parents, besides making sure that they have a DCFS case.
Now, DCF, really wait a minute. DCF, what's that stand for?
The Department of Child Support Services.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. And those two things are this. One, make sure you record a lien, that you create a lien in any and every California county where you either know that that the non-custodial parent, the debtor, owns real property or might own real property in the future. It's easy. It's cheap. You can ask the court clerk to issue what's called an abstract of support judgment. It's an easy judicial counsel form to have the clerk fill out, and then you record it in the county recorder's office. Another easy way to create a lien for support, and this isn't known about too much, is that you can actually get a certified copy of the order which provides you with child support or spousal support. Not a conformed copy, but a certified copy that has a stamp on the back, and you take that to the county recorder, and that will also create a lien.
Oh, that's interesting.
Create a lien. That's my good. First bit of advice.
That's good. Very
Second
good.
Second bit of advice.
Very good. Let me do this, Raymond. We're getting very close to the end of the program. I want to let everybody know that if you are listening to us live, we will continue for another half hour. And for those of you who are listening to us on the internet at www.kalw.org, that's also live, so we'll be able to take your calls in just a couple of minutes. For those of you who may have additional interest in seeing something more about my guest, Raymond Goldstein, his website is www.enforce, E-N-F-O-R-C-E, support, support.com. Raymond, I think what we will do at this point, I'll give you one more minute as a final salute in our half hour.
Okay, great. Get a wage assignment.
Ah.
Get a wage assignment. That is the easiest method of garnishing someone's wages. It's a judicial counsel form FL, as in family law, 195. You can get it for current support or current support and arrearages, or only arrearages. And the magic about that form is that it will work against any employer as long as they're paying money to the debtor, and it's one of the very few remedies that works across the state lines. In other words, even though a California court issued it, if you serve it on an employer in Nevada, that Nevada employer must honor it as if it was an order from their own state.
We've come to the end of the half-hour statewide version. All right, everybody, it's about 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KALW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on strategies for collecting child support. If you have some questions, Raymond, how broad questions do you want? Do you take any questions that go beyond just enforcement of child support? If there are questions involving dissolution of marriage, will you take those, or do you want to just focus on enforcement of child support?
No, dissolution questions are too broad for me.
Okay.
But I'd be happy to field any questions regarding enforcement of any monetary obligation from a family law court.
All right.
So that means child support, spousal support, family support, equalization awards, or payment of attorney fees.
Terrific. All right. Our number is one.
And if there's debtors out there with questions or concerns, I'm happy to help.
Oh, yeah.
As well.
Oh, yeah. Certainly. I'm inviting not only the debtors, that's the persons who have been ordered to make child support. You're welcome to call in. The custodial parents who should be receiving child support, you're welcome to call in. The number is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. And if you are listening to us live on the internet at www.kalw.org, that's also the same number, 1-415-841-4134. You know, Raymond, in this program, when we're dealing with family law, and in particular when it gets to child support or spousal support, I have found in all the years I've been doing this program, which is now in the 31st year of this program, that people are either shy or reluctant to call in. This is a very private, personal situation. So if you want to call in with a question or comment, use a phony name if you like, but let's hear from you. And let me do a couple of things before we take our first call. First of all, for those of you who've tuned in a little bit late, my guest is Raymond Goldstein, a family law attorney. He's the incoming chair of the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section of the State Bar of California. He's the managing partner of the Center for Enforcement of Family Support, which is a private law firm in Culver City. If you don't know where Culver City is, it's in Los Angeles County. He's on the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section of the Los Los Angeles Bar. And let me mention a couple of other things. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is, and you should be able to get usually a human being on the other end of the phone. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone experienced and set you up for a half an hour consultation. You will pay, in most counties, anywhere for the half hour, $25 to $35. That does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service. It's a great consumer service, and I highly recommend it if you need to have that kind of help. One further thing before we take our first call. On this Friday, August 15th, there'll be a lecture on senior citizens how to avoid scams at the San Mateo County Law Library in Redwood City. Unfortunately, senior citizens are the most targeted group for scammers. Attorney Jay White will discuss what you need to know about these scams and what to do if you or someone you know has fallen prey to them. You're invited. If you can go to Redwood City, you're invited to attend the free presentation at the San Mateo County Law Library at 710 Hamilton Street in downtown Redwood City, across the street from the Hall of Justice. You can bring your sack lunch and be there from noon until probably 1 o'clock. And if you'd like some more information, you can call 650-369-4913, 650-369-4913, and I hope that this might be of interest to you. Let's start with Monica. Welcome to the program.
Hi, and thank you for having me.
Well, sure.
I do have a question. I have a court order with my ex-husband. We have two children together. He owns a restaurant, and his wife is in real estate, so they kind of know.
He's got a new wife, huh?
Yes, he has a new wife. Okay. Well, not a new wife. They've been married for a while.
Okay.
But he owes me several thousands of dollars in rearages, and all he pays me is like $26 every month on that. He owns a really nice business, and in court, you know, he wouldn't give us any of his documents. The court did order for him to provide us with documents, but you really couldn't tell anything. He really hid them very well. What do you do in those cases when they're owners of business, they know how to hide it?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do?
What county are you in, Monica?
Alameda.
And that's where the court ordered child support?
Yes.
Okay. Please, Raymond, what comments do you have for Monica?
Well, Monica, let me first ask you, your appearances in court so far, have they been with the assistance of the Department of Child Support Services, or have you been there alone or with an attorney?
I first had an attorney, and then he decided not to represent me, and so I represented myself, but with the help of an attorney.
Okay, great. All right, so this is a great question, and it dovetails perfectly into the comment I made before the break about serving wage assignments. It is phenomenally common that I see people with wage assignments and even attorneys that have clients with wage assignments who fail to serve a debtor's closely held corporation. In mm-hmm. other words, a debtor's own business. And the reasoning is always the same. He's supposed to pay. He knows he's supposed to pay. He's not sending a check. What? Do you think he's going to garnish his own wages? Question mark?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And the answer is you absolutely always, every time, without exception, must serve the wage assignment on that debtor's closely held corporation. Why? The answer is because the corporation's failure to comply with that wage assignment order, A, sets up the corporation itself to be liable, not just for all of the garnishments that it should have taken out of the employee's wages, but also up to a 50% penalty. Of that.
Wow.
That's the first reason. See, then your debt, because at this point in time, your debtor is the individual, not the business. But in this way, you now have liability against the business itself.
Okay.
Second reason.
That, Raymond, let me interrupt for a moment. That assumes that the non-custodial parent, the person who has been ordered to make child support payments, has actually incorporated his business. Isn't that not correct?
Well, that's right, and I was assuming that being a restaurant, the business has some form of corporate recognition, whether it be an LLC, a partnership, or a corporation. Let's ask Monica.
Or it could be a partnership also, could it not?
It could be. Monica, do you know?
You know what? I don't know. I do know he has it like a partner with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So this is one of those examples where we get back to one of the comments I made earlier about keeping track of your debtor. And it may not be directly. It might look like you sending a friend into his restaurant to have a bite to eat and take a look at the license, the city business license that's hanging on the filing cabinet.
Yeah.
Or hanging over the register, which is supposed to be clearly displayed. That will tell you the entity that has been granted the license. So that's the first thing I suggest. So the second reason to serve a wage assignment, even if you expect noncompliance, is that that noncompliance will be the first nail in the coffin. Some remedy a little later down the line, such as determining that that corporation is merely the debtor's alter ego.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's him, but under a different name, and he's using the corporate account to conceal his income and assets. Now, Monica, this isn't easy. You're with debtors that are self-employed, it's a difficult challenge. Here's the thing for everybody out there who's owed money. If your debtor has the means to pay, no matter how concealed his income or assets might be, I assure you that there is a way under the law, and there is a judge that is willing to utilize that way to invoke a remedy that will get you what you're owed. Now, if you're dealing with somebody who doesn't have a pot to do anything in, if you're dealing with somebody they're just down and out in their luck, there may not be anything that can be done. That kind of falls under the category of bad things happening to good people. You're a good person, you're a good mother, you've got a support order, but you're not getting paid. And sometimes, by the way, the right thing to do is to kind of direct our attention to other parts of our life. I get a lot of calls from people that are very sour because of how stressed out they've been for years or decades. We're talking about money. Yes, it'll be very useful for you when you get it, but let's not let it ruin the present-day life. Now, and by the way, just to put in the back of your mind, there are other ways of collecting from people aside from their current income and assets. So, it's not widely known that Social Security benefits are actually garnishable. So now your debtor, your ex, may not be entitled to receive benefits right now, and maybe it's going to be 20 years before he is, and you can garnish them, and at that point when you receive the money, maybe you'll be contributing to your child's wedding. But you'll be doing it with even more money, with 10% interest added on for all of these years.
Go ahead, Monica.
I have just one question. So when it's a court order and it goes to child support services, I always thought that when somebody owes money in arrearages, they get their license held up, a lot of things.
Good point.
That not happen, or do I have to actually go and do all these things through court? Or how do I know that these things are being done?
Chuck, can we just keep Monica on the line for the rest of the hour?
Well, unfortunately, no. But if you can respond to her question in the next 5 minutes, I think it'd be great.
Let me be brief for you, Monica, but what you raise is so important. What you are addressing is one of the main reasons to have a case open with the Department of Child Support Services, and that is because of the remedies that only the department has. You don't have it as a private litigant. I can't do it for you as an attorney. Only they can do it. So what are those remedies that only the department has? Well, it's suspension of driver's licenses. It's suspension or revocation or non-renewal of passports. It is the ability to suspend professional licenses like an attorney's bar license or a physician's license or a contractor's license or a real estate professional's license. They also have the ability to garnish unemployment, and they also are the only game in town for being able to intercept somebody's federal tax refund. So to answer your question, yes, they can do that. They should be doing those remedies. And if they're not, and this goes back to something I said earlier, they're overburdened and underfunded, you need to, at first, politely ask, and then ask again, and then ask again, and then ask again. After you've given it enough effort of asking again nicely, there is actually an established procedure with the department for filing a complaint and asking them to review how your case has been handled. And they will review that. And if you're not happy with that review, you can appeal the decision and actually can be entitled to a hearing on it. So that's one way within the department to try to get more attention to your case.
And that's true, I think, for most counties, Monica. It means you contact Alameda County, ask them to connect you or give you the phone number for the Child Support Services Office.
Actually, if I may, Chuck, I'd like to give that statewide number out.
That would be fine, would you? Please.
Yeah. That number is area code 866, toll-free, 866-901-3212.
Okay. So she should call 866-901-3213 to get started. Is that right?
Yeah, that's 3212, and that is the State Department, and they can direct you to any one of California's 58 counties who might be handling the case.
How's that, Monica?
Great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Good luck to you, and be aggressive. Be aggressive. Don't think, what can I do? I'm just a victim here. You can be aggressive, and there's a lot out there that can help you, so good luck.
Thank you. I'm finding that out. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Here's a question that was brought into the studio, Raymond. What about a woman and children who are entitled to child support and the ex-husband has stopped making payments? If she goes on welfare, is she still entitled to go after him and collect child support?
Well, there's different types of welfare. There's general relief welfare, and that does not impact one's rights to receive child support. But the more common type of welfare related to parents that have young children originally was something called AFDC, Aid
yes.
to Families with Dependent Children.
Right.
The program is now called TANF, Temporary Assistance to Needy Families. And when you receive cash aid, not Medi-Cal and not food stamps, but cash aid, you, as a matter of law, in other words, you don't even have to sign anything, although you normally do, as a matter of law, you are assigning your rights to collect the child support from the debtor to the state and the county so that they can collect the amount they paid you and be reimbursed that cash aid that they paid.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
For certain limited amounts, you no longer have the right to collect for the periods that you were on welfare.
All right. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guest is Raymond Goldstein, a family law attorney. He's the incoming chair of the executive committee of the family law section of the State Bar. Our number, in case you'd like to call, we still have a few minutes in the program, 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. Also, I want to let you know we'll do our Call a Lawyer night on 2 weeks from now, on August 27th. The topic on the air will be employment law, and you might want to jot down the number for Call a Lawyer, where you can talk to a number of attorneys off the air while I'm doing the live program. 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. And Errol, thanks for being so patient. Welcome to the program.
Hello there.
Hi.
Thank you. I have a question about my son is going to college up in Antioch, and you know, his books are a lot of money, so I help him out on that. But he also has some child support issues from his up in Oregon, and he's been paying that through working at the Regency and that kind of thing.
That's a hotel, the Regency?
Oh no, the Regency Ballroom.
Oh.
In some of those where they do all those shows and that kind of thing.
Okay.
Anyhow, what he gets as far as the school is some money for his college, and then I help him out with the books because they're like $200 and $300, right? They're lots of money. But so he uses his pay stubs to rectify how much money he spent for his child support coming out of Oregon, and it's not quite the same thing. Now, don't they send him? Wouldn't he be beginning a statement about that, or does he have to be more proactive about that kind of thing?
Earl, let me make sure I understand. We're talking about your son.
Hello?
Yeah,
talking about your son who owes. Does he himself have a child support obligation? For
oh yes, exactly.
Okay,
and
all right.
He,
so
he's been taking care of it.
Errol.
Has money to pay for it. You know,
Errol, stop. Let Raymond continue to respond, please.
Right. So, and then to further clarify, he's got a child support obligation, but. And in addition to an arrearage that he hadn't paid for some time, he's been contributing to that child's education. Is that right?
Right.
Okay.
I was paying his paycheck out of the work he's been doing now.
Yes,
yeah.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. Child support is owed to the custodial parent.
Yeah, right.
Never owed, at least in California. I'm going to answer your question as if this were all in California.
Yeah, okay, that's
so it very well may be different in Oregon, okay? But in California, it's always owed to the custodial parent or the custodial person. It might be a grandparent, et cetera. It's never owed to the child directly, and, in fact, it's never even collectible by the child directly.
Uh-huh, yeah,
okay?
right.
So
sure.
if your son and his former spouse or the mother to the child have an agreement, hopefully a written one, that payments he makes for college will be applied toward his child support obligation, then he's going to be okay in all likelihood. However, if that's not the case, then probably the category he falls into is being a good concerned father and trying to help his son out, and he still has a child support obligation to his former spouse or to the mother.
Well, what I was asking you about is there's a discrepancy between what he gets as his paycheck on his pay stubs and all that kind of thing, where they say, okay, this goes to the child support, and what is actually being registered in Oregon, and so when he tries to get the
right.
the money to go for college as far as classes and that kind of thing, it's saying, oh, it's $5 difference, $10 difference, or whatever the difference is, you have to do so. You have to rectify that. Is there something he needs to do that?
Well, yeah. I mean, if he's not getting proper,
Oregon have already done that for him.
Yeah, if he's not getting proper credit for the payments that are coming out of his check,
yeah.
then, yeah, he should ask the department, whether it be in Oregon or California, for an audit. And sometimes, though, you should know that the agencies can pay a small fee,
uh-huh.
can charge a small fee
yes.
on each check, and sometimes
yeah.
employers can charge a small fee on a garnishment check, and those fees are usually not credited. You know, it's as if it came out of the debtor's pocket, not the creditor's. So, Earl, I don't think I can help you more on that very factually specific question, but I would suggest you start by finding out what accounts for the difference in what he's not getting credited for.
Yeah. Well, that sounds great. Thank you for
it. Okay, Earl. Thanks very much for calling.
Okay.
Tell your son. Where is your son? In Oregon?
No, he's in Antioch. He's taking the kind of courses where he can work in the with Chevron.
Okay.
And kind of
why don't you
all the machines,
Errol?
You know,
Errol. Why don't you ask your son to access www.kalw.org/RSS. He will be able to hear this program. He should listen to this.
Yeah.
He can get a podcast, a free podcast of the program.
RSS, right?
Yeah. Let me give it to you again. www.kalw.org/RSS.
Yeah.
And then he'll be able to access your legal rights and be able to listen to the program and get a podcast.
Well, that sounds really great.
Okay.
Every time I have a question about anything with computers, he's the guy that.
Oh, good. All right. Well, then he should be able to do it. We're going to move. We're going to move on, Errol. Thanks very much for calling. Good luck. Good luck. Let me, Raymond. Let me come back for a moment to Monica, and the power that the Child Support Services has, and assuming that her former husband, who owns and operates a restaurant, whatever the entity may be. Let's assume that he has applied for and gotten a license from the local city or whatever the entity may be. Are you saying, or do you know, can Child Support Services actually challenge, because he has not made child support payments, challenge that license can be canceled?
Well, I don't know if I don't think that city.
That's
licenses,
not a. It's not a professional
it's
license.
Not a professional license.
Yeah.
And here's the other problem in that case is that the license is probably held by the corporate entity,
yes.
Not by him personally.
Right.
And let me give you, if this were a case that I were to come in on, if there were substantial arrears, which you know, 50, 100, hundreds of thousands,
yeah.
And it was really worth. The effort of getting into a real legal battle. Another remedy that one might seek is what's called a turnover order. Turnover orders are usually used where you ask a judge to have the debtor turn over some type of personal property, usually to the sheriff, and then an auction ensues, and 30 days later, and the creditor might get some money out of it. Although there's a very complicated. Set of statutes about exemptions. You can't take the last penny of a debtor's property in certain circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, one of the types of turnover orders you can get is a turnover order for shares of stock. So if this debtor, for example, is incorporated, which is very possible, you can ask for a court order for him to turn over his shares of corporate stock in that restaurant to the sheriff. And whoever purchases those stocks at the sheriff's auction would then actually be the owner of those shares and maybe of the restaurant.
I hope Monica is listening to this because that could be very valuable to her.
Absolutely. You know, let me just generally comment here. I mean, there are so many different remedies. I mean, there's appointment of receivers, and
mm-hmm.
there's
mm-hmm.
thing, and you can execute on real estate and personal property, and you can bring people in for examinations, not just the debtor, but his spouse and his friends and his colleagues. You can levy on bank accounts in the debtor's name. You can levy on bank accounts in the debtor's name with third parties. You can levy on bank accounts standing only in the name of the debtor's spouse. You can do all kinds of things. Sometimes the most effective strategy in enforcement isn't always about getting your hands on the money. It's about the leverage points.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that is going to cause so much grief, legal grief, to the debtor that he's going to decide, you know what, it's time to start paying this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes I tell my clients that I see my job as helping debtors reprioritize what's important in life. And, you know, and really with dogged persistence, you can accomplish exactly that goal where you change somebody's position in life and decide, you know what, it's time that I start complying with this order. Here's what somebody doesn't need to do who has an order for child support. They don't need to go into court and ask the judge to order the debtor to pay. They've already got that order.
Yeah.
Yet that's a very common thing that people do.
And there is not there is not some kind of sanction other than you can't, by not paying, the court can't order you to go to jail, for example. That's not possible here.
Well, actually it is.
And, oh, really?
Chuck, I know you're sitting down, so I'm going to tell you something. First, I'll tell you about contempt.
Yeah.
Yes, contempt is one of the remedies that are available. The United States has done away with what we call debtor's prison. You can't go to jail for owing a debt.
Mm-hmm.
However, because of the great public policy importance of people paying their support, that's both child and spousal support, you can bring an action for contempt for failure to pay. It's one of the more difficult remedies to prevail upon, and all the loose rules of evidence that are common in family law go out the window, and everything
mm-hmm.
becomes very strict at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So contempt is absolutely a remedy that might be available. It's usually one of my last recourses, because really what I want to do is grab the money or the assets for somebody.
Well, of course, of course.
But the as far as penalties, first of all, child support and all obligations, whether it's equalization, spousal, attorney fees, child support, it all accrues interest at the rate of 10% simple interest.
That's the state interest rate.
That's the legal rate of interest,
yeah.
Which isn't a bad interest rate.
Not bad.
Here we go. You ready for this?
Yeah.
In addition to legal interest, a debtor who owes child support can be penalized 6% a month,
ooh.
Up to 72% a year,
whoa.
On unpaid child support obligations, and
wow.
That's in addition to the legal rate of interest.
That's
so
very interesting.
So there are real penalties to the debtors out there. If you're going to stiff some creditor, don't let it be the child support creditor. That's really not the one that you want to be left with.
A couple of very quick questions. I hope you can give quick answers. What about pensions? Can custodial parent levy on pensions?
You can't levy on a pension because
mm-hmm.
pensions are governed by a federal body of laws called ERISA.
Yeah.
But there is a method. As I said before, there's a method of getting to almost any asset or stream of income, and the method in this case would be through what's called a quadro, a qualified domestic relations order. Normally, people see quadros in the dissolution of marriage where they are dividing the marital interest. You get half of this plan, and you get half of this plan.
Raymond, we have...
Quadros can also be used to enforce support.
We have come, unfortunately, to the end of the program. I want to thank you very much for joining us. Been
it
great.
Is my absolute pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity. I just encourage everybody to not give up out there.
Let me finish, Raymond. We're running out of time.
Yeah.
My guest is Raymond Goldstein, a family law attorney. He's the incoming chair of the executive committee of the family law section of the state bar, managing attorney of the Center for Enforcement of Family Support, a private firm in Culver City. That's L.A. County. Raymond, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Chuck. Thank you.
Great to have you on the program.
My pleasure.
Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made by the Family Law Section of the State Bar. Additional funding of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, we are going to be talking about alternative collaborative courts, including drug court and veterans treatment court. My guests are Judge Richard Livermore and Judge John Gransert of the Superior Court of San Mateo County. I hope you join us then. Thank you very much for listening to Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Thank you.